Welcome to Narratives. Climate change is everyone's problem. Here, Professor Peter Doherty explains that we are running out of time simply because of the inaction and willful ignorance of those who have the power to make a difference.
Our durability as a species is clearly and inevitably linked to the livability of our only home, this small green earth that astronauts see from space. Can we be in any real doubt that we must use whatever power is at our command to ensure the continuation of those fortunate realities we experience now for the sustenance of our descendants? Even if you do not accept that anthropogenic global warming is a reality, any evidence-based view must incorporate an awareness of the ever-increasing environmental degradation, the pollution of the oceans with plastics, the rapid clear-cutting of tropical and other forests, the continued depletion of non-renewable resources, the incontestable acidification of the oceans, the pressures on uncontaminated water availability, and so on. The need is to practice the preventive medicine of the planet. In order to do that effectively, we must somehow align the political and cultural realities with the objective reality measured by scientists. If we are to move forward, neither reality can be denied. We don't treat in denial when we feel ill, and in fact, the opposite tends to be the case. Self-diagnosing, we rush to the web or some popular medical tome, check out our symptoms, and are soon convinced that we have an aggressive cancer or some other terrible disease. We're relieved when our doctor tells us not to worry. The cause of malaise is minor and we will soon recover. On the other hand, reading that the planet may warm between 2 to 6 degrees Celsius before 2100, we tune out the upper limit, tell ourselves that 2 degrees is not so bad, and don't make the obvious connection that even if the lowest level turns out to be the case, time does not stop at the end of this century. Try thinking of the Earth as a living organism, a patient, if you like, that is increasingly compromised and is not infinitely resilient. The basic diagnosis made by the majority climate science community concerning anthropogenic climate change is now as good as any clinical diagnosis made by a well-qualified medical specialist. Though both deal with very complex systems, where the two diverge is that climate science is limited to an experimental group size of just one, or N equal one, the planet and every life form on it, while the oncologist or neurologist has for a common medical condition a collective and personal experience of multiple cases, perhaps in the order of N equals 100 or N equals 1,000. Not only that, much larger, statistically significant groups of patients will have been subject to intense measurement and ultimately a few will have come to post-mortem. There's much less clinical experience and less short-term certainty in the climate science diagnosis. But what we know about cumulative toxicities in medicine would suggest that continuing with this exposure is not a good way to go. To paraphrase John Donne, do not ask for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for all of us. It's time to move beyond the diagnostic phase for climate science and, while monitoring continuing events closely, switch our emphasis to preventive medicine and treatment. For instance, we could do a very great deal to modify the way we use energy and develop future energy resources along lines that, while they may threaten old and powerful industries, would be of general benefit for a much broader spectrum of innovative business activity. Fossil fuel companies like to push the line that limiting the use of their product will greatly compromise the poorer countries. But the poor always come off worst in any catastrophe. And why would distributed solar not be a much better solution for rural Africa than, say, a coal or diesel-fired generator with associated grid? And we need the miners to provide the silicon for solar, the lithium for batteries, and the metals for all renewable applications, including wind and water turbines. Continuing the parallel between medicine and climate science, intelligent people who locate a large lump somewhere or find themselves experiencing recurrent tightness across the chest with pain in their left arm don't rush to consult an alternative medical practitioner, a salesman from the pharmaceutical industries, a health economist, a person they met in a supermarket queue, or a medico who hasn't practiced for decades, their favourite newspaper columnist, or a talkback radio host. the debunking retirees, quack pseudoscientists, professional apologists, snake oil salesmen and media blowhards in the climate science area have surely had more than their fair hearing. It's time that we harness the power of the physical and biological scientists, the inventiveness of engineers and technologists, and the social insights of behavioural science to develop effective medicines, invasive procedures, and mechanisms for real, meaningful action. Surgical excision of a large tumour is called debulking. Having a life-threatening mass removed is no fun, but do we delay, saying it costs too much, or it would be more convenient to have this done later? Of course, there's always the deny and die option. Whatever convictions you've come to concerning anthropogenic climate change, can any of us doubt that our extraction, depletion, infinite consumption culture is rapidly degrading planetary resources? The maths, which lead rapidly to the conclusion that we need three planets, are not hard to do. We'll get nowhere if politicians and the democracies are, from deliberate ignorance or cowardice, unwilling to educate and legislate in ways that promote global sustainability. That's why each and every one of us needs to come to a reasoned view of what is or is not important and advocate accordingly. A good place to start is talk to family, friends and colleagues, convince everyone to vote. Democracy is ineffectual and compromised if we do not inform ourselves and fail to exercise that basic and precious right that has been and is still being so hard fought. There are alternatives to what is happening now. We should not allow ourselves to be trapped by the belief that all is lost in the fate of corrupt, dissembling and self-serving power elites. Most of us think we have no real clout on the national or international scene. But as microbiologist René Dubos said, think globally, act locally. And Dubos, who lived from 1901 to 1982, for all his fine intellect, could not have been expected to predict the era of the internet. Today, we can all put up accessible and intriguing content on YouTube or some other form of social media for anyone, anywhere in the world to see. Any individual initiative may seem like dripping water onto a stone, but combining those drops into regular torrents, and water has the power to carve new riverbeds and change landscapes. Still, we don't have geological time, and timely action is everything with issues that impact on sustainability. A good downpour, though, can reveal dangerous rocks, expose poorly buried bodies, and wash away loads of old rubbish. Water is the stuff of life. Personal and collective participation is the stuff of meaningful action. There's no free pass for any of us, and as with everything that is difficult, it's a case of no gain without pain. Relaxed and comfortable is just not an option. And with particular regard to our political leaders, if ignorance of the law is no defence for any citizen, is the deliberate ignorance of scientific evidence an excuse for lawmakers? That will be one of the questions asked by future generations. Who wants to be thought of by their children and their children's children as a dupe or a compliant co-conspirator? We can make a difference, but only if we stand up and make our voices heard. I didn't know or I felt powerless will not be an excuse.
You've been listening to Peter Doherty reading from his book, The Knowledge Wars. Narratives is produced by Karina Wynne-Moylan of Arts Campus, Bay FM 99.9.